Welcome to the Stanley Street Social Podcast presented by MAP. My name is Alex Clements. Today on the show, we have our first Outside the Bubble episode for Season 2. He's a professional horse rider. He loves cycling and his name is Stephen Baster. He's ridden 12 Melbourne Cups in his very established career. We caught up with him to talk about how he got into the sport, how he got into cycling, the longevity of his career, how hard a race is, the influence he has on his horse, how he goes from changing horses to horses, plus much, much more. If you like the podcast, please hit subscribe and leave a review, share it with a friend, and let us know what you think via social media. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome, Stephen Baster, to the Stanley Street Social Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's 7:30. You're a close second after our 7:15 podcast last weekend to the earliest podcast. But after I sent you a message, you said you finished training at 6 a.m.
Yeah, my day starts abnormally early. My alarm goes off sort of about 2:40, 2:50 in the morning. And I live down the Mornington Peninsula, so I jump in the car and put it on cruise control and I'm jumping on my first horse at Flemington at 4 a.m.
Why so early?
They basically do it. It's a very popular question. They basically do it to... There's a few reasons. It's to keep the horses in routine. So they obviously wake up first thing in the morning and they give them breakfast and then they go out and do their work. And they've obviously got quite a few horses to work. And then during the day they have the maintenance on the tracks. And so they can't have the staff working, you know, start at 4 a.m. They can only work 8-hour days, 9-hour days. So they work split shifts. So the staff work from 4 till, say, 9 o'clock in the morning and then come back in the afternoon and do the horses from 3 to 5 or something like that. So they can feed them breakfast early and then dinner late-ish as well. So it gives the horses a bit more of a routine. And it's something that I'm used to now.
Cause so are you training at 4 a.m. every morning?
No. I'm one of the older ones now, so I don't do as much as what I probably used to. So I'm in there probably on average 3 mornings a week, maybe 4.
Is out at Flemington?
Yeah, out at Flemington.
And then the rest of your day, like it's 7:30 now, what do you do?
Yeah, so the rest of the day, yesterday morning, I had to... we've got these new race-free Mondays that were designed to give everyone a day off, but it doesn't work that way. We've got so I got to Flemington at 4 and did a couple of gallops there for Gay Waterhouse and then went to Moonee Valley. They had gallops there at 6:30, so they wait till just about daylight and gallop some there. And then during the day we had trials, which are practice races at Cranbourne, which started at lunchtime, so... That was my day yesterday, and then today I've got the day off, so which I'm finished now, which is nice and early day finish. But normally I have races, so the races are average. I probably average riding 4 days a week races, so that's normally let's say a Wednesday, Thursday or Thursday night, and then normally a Friday night at Moonee Valley, and then Saturdays normally a city meeting wherever the city meeting is, and then sometimes Sundays as well.
Yeah. So how many race days how many races would you do a week?
So I'd say myself, I'm not one of the busier jockeys these days because I'm one of the older ones. I'd probably average 3 or 4 rides each meeting. So, you know, up to sort of anywhere between 10 and 20 rides each week.
Same trainer, same like how do you have a contract? How does the salary system or how do you get money? Like who do you work for?
It's funny you say that. I actually was out riding the bike yesterday and somebody said to me, so let me get this right, you're a full-time jockey.
Yeah.
So you make a living out of that. So, yeah, well, I've been doing it since I was 17 and I'm 44 now, so you can obviously make a living out of it. But it's full on and the salary or the contract, as you call it, but I'm freelance, so... Most jockeys now have a manager that rings around to try and get rides, and obviously the work you do on a morning, you try and ride the horses on the morning that you're riding race day in the next couple of weeks. But at the moment, I've got a couple of major stables that I ride for, and then the rest is stuff that I pick up through my manager. But we get paid per ride. So We call that our wages pretty much. So just to turn up and ride a horse, we get paid per ride, and then we get 5% of any prize money that the horse earns.
And so you're jumping from horse to horse consistently?
Yeah, I'd probably ride, I'm just guessing, but probably 400 different horses per year.
You see cyclists, they go on the spare bike and they look lost, like, because it's just not their bike. It's set up exactly the same and they always want to go back. So how do you go going from horse to horse all the time?
It's different because I've got two bikes. If we talk about bikes, and one's a Basso and one's a Canyon, and the Canyon was quite a bit more expensive than the Basso, but the Basso is so comfortable for me now. I always go back and ride it when I feel a little bit lost. But the horses, you tend to like them the faster they are.
Yeah.
So even if they're not comfortable, but they're fast, you know, you do get used to them, and they've all got they're all really similar. Obviously, their mannerisms can be a bit different, but you get used to them. You get used to them.
Yeah. And then when did cycling come on the scene?
Cycling started for me probably about 4 years ago. I had a long history of fitness stuff. I started off when I was a kid. Doing taekwondo. I did it for like 10 years, and then I started being a jockey, and I started doing a fair bit of running, and I thought I was all right for a little bloke, but I probably wasn't that fast. And then I went from running to triathlon, and I bought a push bike. I bought my first road bike when I was living out at Kyneton. I had a job out there, contracted job for a stable, and I bought a bike. I had no idea. I drove from Kyneton to Essendon and went to other bike shops and had no idea. Just went in and bought full kit, a bike. I think it was, I can't even remember what it was now. I think it cost me about $1,000 at the time. And rushed home. I had races at Ballarat that day. Rushed home, put it inside the house, went to the races. Horse flipped over in the gates with me, broke my foot in two places. So I didn't get on the bike for about a year, and then I got on the bike, and I didn't know anybody else that rode, and I didn't really enjoy it much riding by myself, to tell you the truth. So that sort of got cobwebs on it, and then I moved and met some people that did triathlon. And so I started getting back on the bike, and I still remember them laughing at me because I was riding up some hills and I had my seat down really low. They'd set me up at the bike shop, because it would have looked hilarious. You know, they wanted my feet to be touching the ground and things like that, so people were just laughing at me, so I look like an idiot. So anyway, then I did triathlon for a couple of years, and realised that I really enjoyed being on the bike, and being on the bike obviously took away a lot of the I'm not a young bloke, so it took away all the aches and pains that I had when I was running and race riding on the horses, and got sore hips and things like that. And the bike for me is comfortable, and I really enjoy it. So it's stuck. I was going to go back to triathlon. I was only going to spend a year on the bike and then go back to triathlon, but I've loved the bike and stayed on it ever since.
And now it's part of your training?
Yeah, it is. It actually work gets in the way of my cycling because I enjoy the cycling so much. Obviously, working early mornings, I can't get out with all the crew down at mornings, and I've got a really good crew that I go riding with down there, and it's something that I enjoy. But I've done a few events now, and I got Mark O'Brien helped me with a little bit of training, but it obviously I don't have enough time to do as much of it as I would like to. But yes, I'm on the bike probably at least 3 days a week.
So in that hectic training week you described before, where does the bike fit? Like, what was the day look like with riding in it?
Okay, so Sundays, I try not to ride horses on a Sunday, so I try and get out with the crew on a Sunday morning and do a long ride. And then during the week, if I've got a day off, like today, for instance, I might go for a lunchtime ride by myself. And then Wednesday morning, at the moment, I don't have anything planned at the moment horse-wise, so I'll try and get out with the crew on a Wednesday morning if I can. And then other days, if I've got a ride, obviously my weight's got to be the right weight for race day, so I might get on the indoor bike, get on my Ergo, and do half an hour, reasonably intense, and that'll make me sweat off probably half a kilo, and that's a nice little warm-up before I go to the races.
What do you need to weigh?
So this is one of the things I love about cycling, because it suits everybody, you know, and everybody tells me it's like following a matchstick when you get behind me, so there's not much drafting behind me. I'm 54 kilos, and at times I get down to 52, 51 and a half, depending on the time of year, over spring carnival time.
Yeah.
I've got to ride a bit lighter, so I'll drop weight over that time of year. But obviously, when it gets to the hills, it helps me an awful lot, and that doesn't help the other guys that weigh 80, 90 kilos.
And you mentioned, so you've done a few events as well. So you really got into it, not just a little part-time little commuter. It's a genuine sport for you now in terms of using it as a tool.
Yeah, I love competing. I love competing. I think most cyclists do. I think it's if you're a cyclist, you tend to want to torture somebody at some stage, which I can do it to some people in the hills, and obviously they do it to me an awful lot on the flat. But yeah, I did a few events. So I started off with I think it was Amy's 2 years ago. And I think the longest ride I'd ever done leading into Amy's was about 90K. I'd never gone over 100K before. And I went flat out up the hills, and then couldn't keep up with everybody when we started going down the hills. And then I hit Beach Road along the Great Ocean Road there. And I was all on my own and pancaked. So it was a hard last 20 or 30K. But I loved it. I really enjoyed it. And from then on, I sort of got stuck into it. And then I've done, obviously, I did Three Peaks. And then I went back and did Amy's with Marco helping me. And I really enjoyed it and got through it really well.
Did you get a win on the weekend?
Yeah,
got a win. I saw on the Twitter. And then did you also get suspended on the weekend?
Yes. So you've obviously done your research. Suspensions are quite common. Well, I say they are. I tell everyone they are. But maybe I get a few more than everyone else. But it's basically... like your sprinters in the cycling, you know, pushing out and giving someone a bump. And, you know, we do that quite a bit in racing. You're meant to be two lengths clear of another horse before you come out, so that they don't clip heels, because if they clip heels, they can fall. So it's for our safety. But, I tend to get three or four a year.
And what did you do on the weekend?
Yeah, so I was on a young horse, and it was a race down the straight, and it just basically shifted in. There was three or four horses tight inside me, and one of them had to take hold. And so I get 10 days off, which is 10 days unpaid holiday, which I start next Sunday. So I've got 10 days where I can – I've still got to do some of the morning work, but I try and get out of it when I'm suspended, so I can actually spend more time on the bike.
Like you talked about the reference to sprinting as well, like they have the same thing. There's rules about where you're moving, but it's a little bit grey. Is it the same in horse racing?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. Exactly the same. That's cycling's very similar to horse racing, as in, you've got to be competitive, so you've got to push the boundaries as far as you can. But there is a fine, fine line there that we all cross every now and then, and we don't mean to, but it's we're obviously trying to win, because that's how we get paid, and everyone likes winning. So it's Caleb Ewan, you see him do it all the time, so it's yeah. But it's a fine line.
So in your career, how long can it potentially go for?
Yeah, it's a good career, as in I've always been light. When I left high school, I only finished year 10, and probably, I look back at it now, I'm probably scared the crap out of my mum. I moved out of home when I was 15, and I weighed about 34 kilos. So during my career, I haven't had a lot of trouble with weight, whereas a lot of jockeys do. So quite a lot of them retire. I think the average age for a jockey to retire is 32. But that comes down a lot, because a lot of guys get to 19, 20, 21, and they start getting heavy. Yeah. Whereas I haven't had to worry about it. And touch wood, I haven't had too many falls, so my body's pretty good. So I always thought that I'd retire around 45, but now I say it's 50. And then obviously if I'm still fit when I'm 50, it might be 55. But I have looked into a few other careers, and but it's something I enjoy doing. I love the horses. The horses are great to work with, and I love being competitive. And when I'm not riding the push bike, it's it keeps me fit as well going to work, which a lot of people can't do. You know, there's a lot of people got to sit behind a desk. So I enjoy being out there doing things.
How hard is a race?
I've actually put it on my Strava a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
So
I'll look that up and post that on the Twitter.
Yeah, there is. I think there's one there because I wanted to show Marco when he was coaching me that my day off is not really a day off when I'm riding a horse. So my heart rate, I was listening to your podcast last week, Andre Lagerche, and how my heart rate goes well above its maximum quite often in a race, but for a very short amount of time. So the average race is probably a mile, 1,600 metres, and that takes about a minute 35, I think it is, for a mile. So our heart rate over the last 200 metres probably gets up, mine gets up to 180, 190 easy for the last, 10 seconds. It's not a lot, but during the race, it's probably averages 140, 150. My max is about 193, which it can actually go above if I'm in a close finish. So it's obviously adrenaline. You're also roaring at the horse and pushing as hard as you can. I mean, the horse is the one running, but we're using all our energy as well on top. So it does keep you quite fit.
Is there much, I guess, research or your perception of how much influence you actually have?
That's what I love about cycling as well, because it's I can only blame myself.
Yeah, you're the horse.
It doesn't matter how hard I work at my fitness, it's not going to make that big a difference in a horse race, because obviously if you've got a slow horse, you can't make it go fast. But you can make a lot of mistakes, I find, if you're not fit and sharp. So I like to be mentally sharp and fit. And if you get tired towards the end, obviously you're not helping the horse, and you've got to try and keep them balanced and make them run through the line. So I think our fitness helps, but you definitely can't make a slow one run fast. It's definitely more about the horse than it is about the jockey.
So you finished school at 15 and pursued this career as a jockey. What was the sport like then?
Well, when I look back now, I think it's crazy that I did that. But I finished year 10 and I just was going during the school holidays. Somebody told me about a job that was going at the stables for a stable hand become apprentice jockey, and I'd never touched a horse before in my life. But I was tiny and everyone kept going, you should be a jockey, because I was so small. And so I just said to Mum, do you mind if I do it during the school holidays? So I went and lived at the stables and I just enjoyed it, and it just, I clicked, and I was lucky I ran into the right people at the right time that were supportive and helped me. And I was living in Brisbane at the time, and I spent a year going to pony club as well as riding horses on a morning, and that gave me a really good start. And then a guy suggested that I come to Melbourne, and so when I was 16, I moved down to Melbourne, left my mum and dad behind in Brisbane, and moved down here. And just clicked and got a great start, and was blessed that I got on a fast horse early. I got on a fast horse when I first started riding, and he won some big races. I was hopeless. I basically just sat there and thought that I was a good jockey, but I had no idea whatsoever. And lucky I had the right people and the right horses behind me at the time.
A bold move at 16 to make the jump down to Melbourne.
Again, I didn't think anything of it. I was so young.
See you later, Mum.
I was so young. I look now, I've got a goddaughter that's 15. If she moved out of home, I'd have a heart attack. Yeah. I've got two little girls that are 2 and 4 at the moment, and they won't be going anywhere when they're 15. It was an adventure, and I really enjoyed it. And like I said, I had good people that were like family to me and really looked after me when I was that age, and took me into their homes and treated me as if I was one of their own. And that helped me get through it.
So you go to Flemington over the spring carnivals, and you see this massive festival, carnival, however you describe it now. What was it like when you moved to Melbourne?
I remember my first ever meeting at Flemington that I went to. I was strapping a horse. I wasn't race riding yet. And it was on a Wednesday at Flemington, and I turned up, and I reckon there was 100 people there. And I had this thought, this imagination that there'd be hundreds of thousands of people there. I'd seen this. They had a magazine back then called Racetrack Magazine, and it had all these big, colourful pictures of all, and I couldn't believe it. But because there's racing every day in Melbourne, obviously you're not going to get a big crowd every day. So spring carnival's an amazing time of year, especially to be riding and to be in amongst it if you've got a fast horse. it's a big thrill to be there. But obviously, it's a job for me, so I'm still going on days when there is probably only 50, 100 people at the races, you know, the owners that are coming to watch their horses and things like that.
And so there's always been, like, one thing that amazes me is how much horse racing is. Like, there's this, just never stops. It just goes and goes and goes. Like, there is never something you can't consume that's to do with horse racing.
Yeah.
It seems like.
Well, there's only 2 days a year in Melbourne. Well, we have what they call race-free Mondays now, sorry. So in Melbourne, we've got, I think, 5 or 6 of them, but there's still something to do. But then we've only got Good Friday and Christmas Day, the only 2 days that we don't race. And we have probably 10 race meetings a week on average. So you could ride twice a day if you wanted to. But, yeah, there's a lot of it, and the prize money is amazing. So it's great for me.
Is prize money a major part of your salary?
Yeah, I don't ride as much as some, but I'd say it's half and half. So the prize money's half my income, and the rides is the other half.
And is that a bit inconsistent?
Yeah, over the shop. It's all over the shop. I know the next 10 days I won't be earning anything, so. And it depends on where I'm riding. Like, if I go interstate, obviously I pay my own airfares and things like that. So I could go to the races. They pay us on average about $200 per ride. So I could go to the races interstate and have 2 rides, get $400, but my airfares have cost me $600. So I could actually lose on the deal. So when I go interstate, I've got to try and make sure that I'm riding a horse that I think can win. It's a bit of a gamble, but... you know, I might be riding in a race interstate that's worth, say, of $100,000, so it's $60,000 to the winner, and I get 5%, so it's $3,000 jumps in. You know, so it's a little bit risk to reward, but yes, your wages are up and down like a yo-yo.
And how do you balance your year with only 2 days that you have to have off? Cycling has, it's getting further and further extended either way, but traditionally there was a defined season like football or whatnot. How do you balance your load?
I try, and when it gets wet and cold in Melbourne, I try and take a break then. But again, it depends on my year, how much money I've earned, whether I can take a holiday. I might be riding a good horse at the time that I don't want some other jockey to jump on. So if I go on holidays, obviously somebody else will jump on it and ride it, and then it makes it harder for me to get back on that horse. So yeah, there's a lot of things that come into it. If I get suspended like I am now, I might try and take a week away, which I can do now before the kids get to school, but once the kids are at school, I won't be able to do that. Very rare for me to plan a holiday and just take it, although I am going to Girona for the first time in about a month's time, and just I had an opportunity to go with a friend that's been there plenty of times, a guy that I ride with, and so I'm going to go there for a couple of weeks in just after Easter.
Fantastic.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And just riding?
Yeah, riding. So, it'd be great.
And the amount of race days, has that just come from gambling?
Yeah, it's just obviously people like having a punt. And, yeah, there's just races, races upon races upon races upon races. It's never-ending. But, like I said, there's the carnival times that people aim their better horses to. So, obviously, you've got the Autumn Carnival in Sydney, which is on at the moment, just starting. So that's quite big. And then you've got the Spring Carnival in Melbourne that's huge. So horses they're like our best cyclists. They can't be up all year round fit, so they get aimed at the big carnivals. So if you're going to follow horse racing, it's best to follow the big carnivals, obviously. And then the rest of the year is for the rest of the population to make some money.
Yeah. Is it perceived that gambling has a positive influence on the sport within the guys like you that love the actual nature of horse racing?
I guess so. I don't know. Do you like having a punt? Do you have a punt?
Every now, well, but like I go to the horse racing, but donate some money to the TAB. I don't really have a punt, but yeah, I do on the day.
That's good. You help pay my wages. Yeah, I like
exactly.
That.
It's grown the sport to such a big thing, but Is it perceived as a positive thing for horse racing?
Well, I guess so. I guess that's why.
It has to be.
Although Spring Carnival, is it about punting these days? You know, a lot of people go there for the fashion and the food, and there's so much more of that at the races now. You know, Flemington have just put up this brilliant new grandstand that's just amazing. You go in there, it's like a 5-star hotel when you go in there. So it's about the experience. So it's not all gambling anymore. I think it's all about, you know, they've got. The marquees over Spring Carnival time are just amazing. You know, they start building them. They're better than my house.
Does it keep on growing?
Yeah.
It just seems to get bigger and bigger. But is it going to keep growing?
Well, I think it will. I think, it has. It definitely has. It's got bigger. It's got better. We've got more internationals now. They come out, the internationals, and... I think everybody, if they can get some good tickets over Carnival time, I get a lot more friends over Carnival time because people want to get to the races and get tickets. So it's a great day out and good fun for people. And if you love the horses, which a lot of people do, they tend to go out there and have a look at the horses because they're super fit athletes and they're the ultimate dedicated athlete, really. You know, when you look at them, they get the best food, they've got the best vets, they're sport rotten, and they look $1 million when you look at them. So to me, I really enjoy that, you know.
So the Melbourne Cup, will you be riding again this year, or will you know?
It's really hard.
How does it work with getting a horse for that?
Yeah, well, obviously this far out, trying to pick a Melbourne Cup ride is impossible because, you know, there's so many injuries the horses can get. They might not be in form at the time. There's only 24 runners and half of them are from overseas now, and the overseas tend to bring their own jockeys out. So at this stage, obviously, I've got no idea, but I've probably had about 12 rides in the Melbourne Cup, and the closest I finished is third on one, and that was an international for Aidan O'Brien, and I picked it up, I think, maybe 3 weeks before the Melbourne Cup. And so, yeah, I could pick up a ride as late as the Saturday before the Tuesday.
So when you say pick it up, what does that mean?
So what happens is a jockey might get suspended.
Yeah.
A horse might win the Lexus now, or the Saab, it used to be called. There's a race on the Saturday that can project a horse into the field if it wins it. So if a horse that wasn't going to get in the field gets in on that day and it has a light weight or I've got a connection or I win on it, I get the ride in the Melbourne Cup.
So it's very random. It's not – you can't kind of build your years towards the Melbourne Cup. Like, is it to do with your relationship with trainers? Is it to do with your relationship with owners? Is it like – because is that the pinnacle? Is that what you need to do to maintain that elite status?
Not necessarily. The Melbourne Cup's obviously the Melbourne Cup, and it's the one race that everybody would love to win. And it's massive prize money. So if you win a Melbourne Cup, I think the percentage to a jockey is about $150,000. So it's a pretty good payday. However, there's races every day, and we're making our money. So we don't rely on winning the Tour de France. Say, you know, it's the Melbourne Cup. Yes, it'd be great to win it, but doesn't make that big a difference in the scheme of things. Obviously, you become a lot more famous and you're going to make more money out of that race, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get more rides thereafter because you're not the one performing, the horse is.
Yeah. I did go to the Melbourne Cup this year. Didn't watch a whole lot of horse racing. It was probably more, I'm more of a social consumer of horse racing. I did notice, though, over this year and last year, it has started to get a bit of bad press around the treatment of the horses and how, not environmentally aware, but more socially aware of what's going on. From what you can see, what is horse racing ethical, how it should be?
Yeah, look, we get a lot of this, obviously. Over my whole career, we get a lot of this. But like I was saying to you earlier, the way the horses are looked after, they're just so well looked after, and the people that look after them love the horses so much. And we do get people from outside, you know, and say that, you know, it's not ethical and you're not looking after them and you're forcing them to race and all this sort of stuff. But most of them people don't have horses. They don't look after them. What do they want to do? Just let them run wild. You know, these horses are well looked after. They keep people in jobs. The horses are happy and fit and like just amazing. How well they're looked after. And I think the people, well, it's the same with people that's cycling, you know, the people on the cars on the road, get off the road, bloody cyclists, you know, pests, wearing your lycra, you know. But they're driving cars, you know. You're always going to have people that are anti something. But I think if they're involved in the industry, they would see how well the horses are looked after and how good it is for everybody concerned, and especially the horses. I find a lot of the people that work with them on a morning really love the animals and will do anything to keep them happy. I mean, I've got a horse at home that sits in the paddock, and he's a retired old horse that somebody had finished with. You know, that their kids had learnt to ride on him, and he was an old horse, and they didn't know what to do with him. And he sits out there and gets fed every day and gets looked after, and is pretty happy with his life. And you know, I think that happens with most horses in racing. And there's somebody out there that loves them and looks after them.
Mm. Are you sick of getting asked that question?
No, not at all. Because, I mean, you're always going to get it. Because, unfortunately, it's especially this day and age with social media,
yeah.
If a horse dies on the track or something like that, everybody sees it, you know.
Yeah.
But obviously they're going to die out in the wild as well. But you're not going to see that on social media.
Because I kind of see it as the equivalent to, like, the doping question on cycling. They always ask it. It's like no one... In the sport, it's like, oh, God, here we go again.
Yeah, I tell you, well, we get a bit of that in racing as well. Obviously, we get some bad press because if one... But it's the same in anything in life. You're always going to get good people and bad people, and there's always somebody trying to get an edge. And unfortunately, bad press tends to get out there a lot more than good press.
Yeah. The horse racing's kind of had, as you said, a little bit of bad press around the... Do you call it doping still?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess
deep this is, cheating or whatever. Is the sport, like, what kind of protocols do you have in place to kind of ensure that it is clean?
Yeah, I think this day and age, there's a lot. Obviously, well.
Like, I remember texting you to try and organise this, and you didn't reply till 5 p.m. or something because you were at the track, was it?
I was just trying to brush you.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, so at the races, we're not allowed our phones. Jockeys weren't allowed our phones, so we've got to either leave them in the car or hand them in. Obviously, they don't want us sitting in the jockey's room talking to people outside, so we can't have our phones. Jockeys, we actually get swabbed. I understand, you know, they don't want people out there riding off their head or something like that, but... I don't think there's any point in jockeys taking performance-enhancing drugs because it's not us runnings. But, we actually get swabbed. But when it comes to the horses, there's very strict protocols now. They're not allowed to use any sort of drug within 2 or 3 days. I think it's, definitely 24 hours. Not even like a mouthwash or anything like that without getting the steward's permission. And then they get pre-race swabbed when they first get to the races. I think they've got to be at the track 2 or 3 hours before the race now. And then they get swabbed after the race as well. So it's very strict. And in Australia, a lot of the drugs have been banned. So there's not a lot of it at all. Obviously, you'll still get people trying to cheat, trying to get that little advantage if they can. But the majority of it's pretty clean these days, I would think.
In terms of your career... what's left? Like, what is international racing an opportunity that you want to pursue, or you want to stay here? Or
I've been there and done that. I actually spent a fair bit of time overseas when I was younger. I did a couple of stints in Hong Kong, and then must have been about 6-7 years ago, I spent a year over in Singapore. I've ridden in Dubai. Where else have I been? Mauritius, Malaysia. I've been to a lot of them places, and they're quite interesting to ride at because that's the difference between Australian racing and a lot of the Chinese racing. They go there to have a punt. They're not there to have a good time. They're there to have a punt, and they're very passionate about it, and you cop a lot of sprays over the fence. But the money over there is fantastic for a jockey, so it's a good place to go. However, I'm 44 now. I've had a very good career. Things are still ticking along quite well. So I'm very happy where I am and quite comfortable in my job. And like I said, I enjoy it. So I'm not going anywhere for a while, but at some stage, I'm not getting any younger. I'm going to have to sadly hang the saddle up at some stage, but hopefully not in the near future.
Do many guys, like at the younger point of their career, do they have, is it a kind of necessity to be a full-time gig, or are many of them doing other things?
No, it's all full-time now. So we've got a Apprentices Academy here in Melbourne that I think they can only have 10, well, kids, you call them, 10 kids per year. However, most of them now have finished high school. They're starting off when they're 18, 19, 20. So it's definitely a full-time job. One of the beauties about being a jockey is you get paid just as much as the senior riders. So you turn up day one, and as soon as you start riding, apart from they might give their master a percentage, they might have a boss that they give a percentage to, and we all pay our manager a certain percentage. So that they start off, however, they claim 3 kilos or 4 kilos off a horse when they first start. Now, I'd probably better explain that to you.
Yeah, you need to explain that.
So what happens is the handicap system. The horse that's deemed to be the slowest will be on our minimum, which is 54 kilos. And 54 kilos is myself plus my saddle that goes onto the horse. So that's 54. And the top weight might have 60 or 61. So that'd be me plus a heavy saddle. I might have a 5 kilo saddle instead of a little tiny saddle. And a lead bag, so to get to the 60 kilos. When you put an inexperienced rider on, they'll claim 3 or 4 kilos off that. So instead of having 61, they'll drop down to 58 or 57, and that way they get an advantage. However, the rider is inexperienced and they might make more mistakes, but you'll find over winter time they use the apprentices a lot more because the heavy tracks make it the weight a bit more of a difference.
Yeah.
So it's a great job for a kid starting off because they're going to make really good money to start with, you know, really good money.
And on the cycling bucket list,
you've got your
trip coming up to Girona.
I love doing Amy's, and Marco told me I didn't go hard enough last year because I was attacking for the King of the Mountain, and I think I ran 11th or 12th in the comp, and he told me I didn't go hard enough, but I didn't want to bonk. I didn't want to bonk again because I thought if I get to that, but down to the Great Ocean Road and bonk again, I'm going to cry. So I really enjoy doing that, and I think a big group of us are going to do 3 peaks again this year. And unfortunately, my first year, I told you my bike broke halfway, well, up Toowonga Gap broke, and I had to get a loan bike off Canyon, and I really enjoyed that. So I've just got to manage it around race riding because unfortunately, we have what we call Super Saturday, the day before 3 Peaks.
Yeah.
So that's one of our biggest race days of the year. And then on the Monday is Adelaide Cup Day. So last year when I did 3 Peaks, I got up there about 9:30, 10 o'clock on the Saturday night. Somebody else checked my bike in for me. Got up at 5:30 in the morning, did 3 Peaks. Went for dinner with everybody, got back to the room about 8:30. Got up at 3:30 and drove to Melbourne Airport and caught a plane to Adelaide and rode Adelaide Cup. So it's not ideal. But, I'm really looking forward to doing 3 Peaks and probably Amy's again this year.
Do you follow the pros at all?
I watch all the racing. I remember when I was doing triathlon, somebody said to me, they put it on Facebook, you know, Roubaix's on tonight. This was only about 4 years ago. I had no idea what it was. And so I sat up and recorded it and watched it the next day. And wow, amazing. So my wife hates, I think I've got everything recorded on Foxtel. I don't get to watch a lot of it live. And unfortunately with Instagram and things like that, I always see the result before I get to watch it. But I love all the racing. I've got 2 little kids that don't enjoy watching cycling. They prefer to have something else on the TV. So I don't get all the info out of it, but I do love watching all of it. Even the Nationals this year was amazing to watch. I really loved watching it.
Were you able to get to any races over the Australian summer?
I only went up to the Herald Sun Tour. Yeah. I went up and had a look. That's the first race I've ever been to. And yeah, look, I love it. I love it because it's got so many similarities to what I do. And I really enjoy it, and I'd love to see more of it. I haven't put the hard word on Jerry Ryan yet because he's got a lot of racehorses. So one of these days I'll get a bit of time off and I will head out and to a lot more races, hopefully.
So one synergy the sports have is Jerry Ryan. Like, he bankrolled Australian cycling. He's the reason I had an under 23 program. He's the reason there's a pro team. Is it the same in horse racing?
Jerry's obviously big. I haven't ridden much for him at all, but he's obviously he's a great guy, and he's one thing many people wouldn't know is there's a kid called Harry Coffey that's got cystic fibrosis that's an apprentice jockey. Oh, well, he's a senior jockey now. And Jerry had a horse heading towards the Melbourne Cup, and Harry, he was going to leave Harry on it, the up-and-coming kid, which would never get that opportunity, and unfortunately something went wrong with the horse. But yeah, Jerry's obviously a great supporter of horse racing, as he is of cycling. Yeah. And yeah, we need them people because it just pushes our sport along. Obviously, he's passionate about both.
Is there anything cycling could take out of horse racing's book? Something that you're like, oh, why on earth did they do that?
Not really, because I mean, ours is. I find it's the same with horse racing. It's hard to follow it all because it's not because there's.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, well, it's yeah.
Especially here, like because it's on so late.
Yeah, and obviously different riders go to different places, and it's hard to get in the groove of following where everybody's at and what they're doing, because they can't race all year round. So it'd be nice to have a set program so you know exactly where people are going and what they're doing, so it makes it easier to follow. But. Mm-hmm. I do understand how hard it is and why they can't do it.
Well, thanks, Stephen. Enjoy your day off.
No worries. And oh, I've got to say one other thing, because people watch me when I'm riding in horse racing. The Melbourne Cup last year.
Yeah.
I led on my horse in the Melbourne Cup.
And everyone goes, what are you doing?
Cyclists go, what are you doing? Go into the front. Get cover. It's 30% draft. Horses. So... horses, one thing about them is they've got to relax, because the best way analogy to describe it would be if I get in behind someone and get a bit of a draft, but I'm on a horse that won't relax, it's like riding with your brakes on. So you're basically working hard because your horse just wants to keep going faster and faster and it won't relax. So when you let them roll along sometimes in front, they'll prick their ears and relax and start looking at things and start looking around and won't be as competitive, and that takes away some of the energy. Whereas if you're tucked in behind them sometimes and you can't get your horse to relax and switch off, it just works harder and harder and harder. So you're taking away the advantage that you had from the draft. So if anybody's...
So there's no actual science to it. It's all about you understanding the horse.
Yeah, it's all about keeping the horse happy. So it's... horses gallop on their... they lead, when they're galloping, they can lead with their left leg, which we call their near side front, and their offside front is their right leg. So when they're galloping, they can lead with their left leg, and then they'll come to a bend or another straight. You can get them to swap, and it actually gives them a bit of... they can relax a bit more and gives the muscles a bit of a relief. And then when you're coming back into the straight the next time, you'll try and move your body weight so that they change again to lead with their near side front, and it just gives them a refreshed energy, which is something that you probably can't teach somebody. It's about feel and getting your horse to relax, and you've got to have soft hands, as in if you're pulling against the reins really hard, they feel how tense you are, so you've got to relax. And you talk to them sometimes, they can...
So do the best of the, like the elite horses, do they have their own, like they have one jockey?
Well, at the moment we've got a horse called Winx.
Yeah, so does Winx have his own jockey?
Winx is a girl, and she has one jockey called Hugh Bowman who rides her. And then before that we had Black Caviar, who was a star, and a guy called Luke Nolan rode her. So, yes, if you find one of them fast ones, you do everything you can to stay on them because that's how you make your big money. So they're very hard to find, and I don't think I've ever had one. I've had some good horses, but I've never had any like them too. And Maccabi Diva, she had Glenn Boss, you know. So, yes, if you find a fast one, you try and stick with it as much as you can.
Well, I hope you find a fast horse in the next 5 to 10 years or however long your career lasts. And
thank you very much.
Enjoy Girona.
Yeah, Girona will be big. I can't wait.
And all the best with your cycling.
Thank you very much. And I might see you out there on the road. Thanks, Alex. Good.